This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, September 2nd, 2021. And today will be better than yesterday. And yesterday was pretty rough, Taylor. Boy, a storm passing through here in the Northeast, flooding all over the place. You hope everybody stayed safe. How are you doing?
We are all right. Obviously, I think up here in Connecticut, we got probably... people had it way worse than us. We just got driving rain all night. Obviously, no flooding around my house. So I know that isn't the case for many people, as I saw on social media last night. Hope everyone's all right out there.
Yeah, almost 7 inches of rain in a 24-hour period in New York City. Just crazy. Taylor Schwenk is producing from the foothills of Connecticut in his home studio on Buster Olney, working from my home in New York. The leaderboard has changed in the National League West. Last night, Max Scherzer of the Dodgers was dominant over six scoreless innings against Atlanta. The Braves took a 3-2 lead after Scherzer departed, but then the Dodgers came back. The score was tied 3-3 when A.J. Pollock came to the plate in the bottom of the eighth.
First pitch breaking ball grounded through the left side base hit. Turner is waved around third. He will score easily. A.J. Pollock with the go-ahead hit to bring in Turner, who had tied the game. Seager takes second. The Dodgers take the lead. It's Los Angeles 4, Atlanta 3 in a wild eighth inning.
And that would be the final score. So the Dodgers win. Meanwhile, in San Francisco, the Giants facing the Brewers. Jace Peterson of the Brewers came to the plate in the seventh inning.
And facing Jace Peterson here, 2-2. Posey sets up away. And Peterson in the left field, a base hit. The Brewers will take the lead as Kane scores. And Jace Peterson continues to impress.
Yep, Jace Peterson has had an excellent season, an under-the-radar season, getting a lot of big hits. The Brewers win over San Francisco again. The Giants now a half game behind the Dodgers in the National League West. Meanwhile, the Braves lead over Philadelphia in the National League East is two games. The Mets are five games out. The Reds split a doubleheader with St. Louis, but gained ground on the Padres because San Diego lost to Arizona. Josh Van Meter getting it done against Yu Darvish.
Van Meter hits it deep to right field. That's gone. Josh Van Meter, that's his fifth. Make it 4-0.
That from my old friend Steve Berthume on the Diamondbacks television network. The Yankees faced the Angels, and Garrett Cole was outstanding.
Here's the 2-2. Breaking ball, strike three. Yeah, he made the call. It took a few beats, but he made the call. So Garrett Cole has a 1-2-3 in the seventh, and he finishes the night with a 3-1 lead, 15 strikeouts, and no walks. Wow.
Yep. Wow. Yankees win 4-1. That was John Sterling on WFAN. The Red Sox face the Tampa Bay Rays. Wander Franco keeps on keeping on.
Swinging a fly ball into right field. Angling back is Renfro. Back to the track, to the wall. Gone! Wander Franco with an opposite field homer, and the Rays take a 2-1 lead.
That from 620 WDAE. He has reached base in 32 consecutive games. It's absolutely crazy. But the Red Sox would come back in this game. Top of ninth inning, Jaron Duran at the plate.
The 2-1. Swing, ground ball, right side, base hit. Yeah. Here comes Devers rounding third. And the throw to the plate. He's in there standing. And the Red Sox lead 3-2.
Joe Castiglione, WEI 93.7 FM. At the end of the night, the Rays with a seven-game lead in the American League East. The Yankees leading for the wild card in the American League. Boston in the lead for the second wild card. Some other notes. The White Sox play shortstop Tim Anderson on the injured list with a hamstring issue. White Sox have been hammered by injuries in recent days. Of course, they lost Lance Lynn and Lucas Giolito, two members of their starting rotation, to injuries earlier this week. The Twins right-hander Kenta Maeda had season-ending Tommy John surgery on Wednesday. Former catcher, big league manager, and front office advisor Bob Boone and two scouts will not be with the Washington Nationals in 2022 after declining to get vaccinated. Boone, 73, had been with the Nationals organization since 2005 He, of course, is the father of Yankees manager Aaron Boone. John Smoltz and Al Leiter will not appear in studio for MLB Network after refusing the COVID-19 vaccine. Those two will work remotely for the MLB Network. And yesterday, news broke. The Mets acting general manager Zach Scott is facing a DWI charge, and he was pulled off the team's upcoming road trip. According to multiple reports, Scott was arrested early Tuesday morning in Westchester County, New York, near White Plains, after police said they observed Scott driving erratically. Scott failed a field sobriety test after refusing to take a breathalyzer. Prior to his arrest, Scott had been at the home of Mets owner Steve Cohen for a team fundraiser at which team players were also in attendance. The Mets said in a statement, "We were surprised and deeply disappointed to learn this morning about an alleged DWI involving Zach Scott." Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you got to check out NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease, plus it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting preventive. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. Jeff Passan covers baseball for ESPN. And Jeff, we got a change in the leaderboard at the top of the National League West. What do you make of that?
So we do power rankings every week, Buster, and we get a Google sheet sent out to us and put a number next to the name of each team. And I think I've had the Dodgers on top for like the last 6 weeks or so. Definitely since at least the Scherzer-Turner trade. And I've done it despite the fact that the Giants have actually been a better team all year, because I just thought that the Dodgers are the best team in baseball from the start of the year. And it's kind of hard to change that when you see the talent. And, you know, when I say, and when executives more than me say, I bet on talent, the Dodgers are the shining and prime example of that. They have been a more talented team than every other team in baseball this year. And the record just hasn't reflected it until this point. And I'm not discounting, Buster, the possibility that at the end of the year, the San Francisco Giants are going to be the ones who are on top of the National League West, because talent doesn't always win the day. But in this case, I don't think that the Dodgers are going to be giving back that lead for a significant period of time at any point. I think this is their division to win. I think this is their league to win. And I think this is their championship to win.
Yeah. And it's not as if the Giants are newbies to contending. You know, they've got those three legacy players and Buster Posey and Brandon Crawford and Brandon Belt. But for this group of players, it is the first time, you know, they're at this elevation, this late in the season. And you really felt like at some point that, as I think the case is the same, it could be said of the Atlanta Braves, at some point that experience for the Dodgers was going to come into play, that the players would be like, okay, you know, let's
game time, boys,
happen.
And also let's remember, this all coincides with the Giants running into the Milwaukee Brewer buzzsaw. Yeah. And the Brewers essentially saying, hey, like, understand we're a small market team, understand that the Central kind of stinks. We're still really, really good. And it's not just the Corbin Burnes, Brandon Woodruff, Freddie Peralta, who's, you know, not there right now, trio. It's not just Josh Hader and Devin Williams, who did not give up a run in August. This is a team that for a while now has hit. This is a team that when you have Devin Williams and Josh Hader combining for 23 and a third innings of scoreless baseball with five walks and 38 punch outs in August, is complemented by Brad Boxberger and Hunter Strickland going for 23 and two thirds innings of 0.77 ERA with six walks and 30 strikeouts themselves. The Brewers are really good. And I think that people, generally speaking, around baseball have not recognized what kind of a threat they actually are, because it's not just the players there, Buster. Craig Counsell might be the best manager in baseball. Like, if he's not the best, then he's certainly in the top three, I think, when it comes to executing things on the field, strategizing and using your players to the best of their ability.
Yeah, the other day, coincidentally, I had a conversation with Mark Kotze, who's a coach on the Oakland staff.
Yep.
And I mentioned, and we talked about the best managers in baseball, and I talked about Counsell, who Kotze played with. And I said, you know, I find it really unusual that you have a guy who was an infielder be as good as anybody, maybe better than anybody in terms of running a pitching staff. You know, yes. For years, some of those best guys have been, you know, Bruce
Bochy's,
yep. Former catchers. That, you know, that typically has been the case. And when I asked him about that, you know, Kotze basically said, look, you know, Counts and I used to sit around and manage the game from our positions during the course of the days, you know, which makes a lot of sense to me.
Craig Counsell, Buster, if he were 5'10" and 205 pounds, as opposed to like 5'10" and 160 pounds, probably would have been a catcher.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah. That's the, like his brain just works, I think, in a different way than most. Like when I first met Craig Counsell, I thought he might be a GM before he's a manager. He's got one of those very, very unique perspectives on the game that I think works in any. And I know AJ Hinch is a catcher, but AJ Hinch did the front office thing and does the on field thing now. Like there are certain people whose minds allow them to do just about anything in baseball. And I think Counsell is one of those guys.
All right, let's grab for the low-hanging fruit, okay? What do you think about the New York Mets situation? Because I know when I heard the news yesterday about Zach Scott, you're like, are you kidding me? Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it takes me back to, I think it was 2006 with the Kansas City Royals. And they were in the midst of just this terrible stretch. And somebody asked after a really bad loss to Buddy Bell, oh, buddy, at least it can't get worse, right? And Buddy looked at him. He said, it can always get worse. And the Mets are the living example of that corollary right there. Just when you think that one of your star players who you traded for at the deadline, giving thumbs down to clap back at fans is bad. And when you think that the note that Sandy Alderson, the statement put out in response to that is bad, there's always something worse that can happen. And in this case, you just, you know, you hope for the sake of Zach Scott that there are not problems that go beyond this. You're glad that nobody got hurt in this situation. But you look at where the Mets are right now, and I thought what you wrote is pretty spot on. Like, if ever there is a time for things to get blown up, it's right now. And the interesting part, Buster, is that generally speaking, when new management comes in somewhere, the people who do it best, take a look, assess for a year, figure out who belongs and who does not, and then make decisive moves. And that right there is lining up perfectly with what Steve Cohen can do.
And what I wrote was, and the lead to the piece was basically, at this point, Steve Cohen can make changes with his conscience completely clear. If he wanted to fire Sandy Alderson at the top of the food chain, he would have the right to do that based on what's happened. Everything that, you know, the people that Sandy brought in, first Jared Porter, who was banned from baseball for sexual harassment, and now Zach Scott. And by the way, you know, we have more details to come on Zach Scott and, you know, the allegations at this point. The idea that a major league general manager, acting general manager, would refuse a breathalyzer test at 4:15 in the morning, there's something that really rubs me the wrong way. And it would if I were Steve Cohen. Like, you're not going to be accountable, even when you're stopped by the police. For someone who's going to lead an organization, that really rubbed me the wrong way. But then everything else that got that has gone on, you know, drafting Kumar Rocker, ignoring the red flags that other teams obviously saw because he dropped to 10th overall in the draft, and not signing your first round draft pick. And then, you know, having a team.
The greater sin there to me. Than just drafting Rocker was not drafting backups in the 16th and 17th or 18th or 19th round, drafting high school players who, if you don't sign Rocker, you have a bunch of overslot money that you can go and at least get guys to paper that over. That to me, like with Rocker, you're right. Red flags were there, but things happen in the draft. Sometimes we've seen it in the past, you know, whether it was with Brady Aiken or other, you know, other guys who didn't sign because of medicals, but the lack of a backup plan there was someone needed to say something, someone needed to do something. And ultimately that falls on upper management.
Yep. And then on the field, you give up 11 games in the standings in just a month from July 31st to August 31st. The best move in the front office, as you know, was, in theory, would be the signing of Taiwan Walker, which was completely accidental because they weren't able to sign Trevor Bauer. So the whole thing's been a complete mess. And so Sandy could do whatever, Steve could do whatever he wants and feel completely justified in that. If he were to just walk in and say, you know what, everybody just clean out your offices, don't worry, I'll take it from here.
You know what, that's actually going to be an interesting part of this to me, if that's the route that he takes, if he does go for new leadership on the baseball operation side. Does he give that person essentially carte blanche? Or because that person's coming in to a group of employees, is it going to take another year for him or her to assess what the organizational structure looks like and where the improvements need to be made? You know, Steve Cohen's never seen what a baseball front office looks like before. And while he's got friends in ownership ranks, I mean, how many owners truly know how their baseball operations department at lower levels operates? You know, most of them are dealing straight with the general manager, or president of baseball operations. So they only see that level and none of the managing down that needs to get done. And what they need at this point, to me, as much as anything, is a manager. And what I mean by that is somebody who can take a culture that has this underlying rot to it and be like a mitigation specialist, where everything you do, every hire you make, every person you bring in has a goal to get rid of this stench that pervades this organization habitually.
And just to be clear, you're not speaking literally about a manager. You're talking about someone who's managing the organization.
Yes. Well, I mean, maybe both.
Well, and I mean, let's face it. They're going to make a change at manager when the year's over. Joel Sherman wrote yesterday, as you know, a number of people did last year, about Theo Epstein maybe being a potential match, you know, after Theo left the Cubs. I don't think that's going to happen. I think Theo is in the midst of his work for Major League Baseball now, and I think that there are other situations in the future which may develop for him. I wrote in my piece about David Stearns of the Brewers, and I've had sources tell me that he's got a year left on his contract. Executives with other teams believe that Stearns now, you know, he's obviously been very successful with the Brewers. Mm-hmm. He's close enough to the end of his deal where he can have a frank conversation with Mark Attanasio, the owner of the Brewers, where he can basically say, if this is what David wants, look, I'm from New York. I grew up a Mets fan. And you know what? I want to go and take a shot at this. And if Mark Attanasio initially says no, then he can say, well, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not signing after my contract expires next year, and they can work something out. That's the view of people at the front office level. I know there are people at the ownership level who don't agree with that, but that's what happened with Theo Epstein when he left the Boston Red Sox. Tell me about what you think about David Stearns as a potential match or others you see as potential matches.
David Stearns, I think, is one of the best executives in baseball and has proven that. And I think it's going to come down for him to a matter of the comfort that he's established in Milwaukee. It's a really good organization to run. It's a really nothing about that job is easy, but I think being a general manager or president of baseball operations in the Midwest in that size media market is a much easier thing on your life and still a very fulfilling thing. But I almost look at this like I do with Andrew Friedman. Andrew Friedman had a very comfortable existence in Tampa Bay. And Stu Sternberg is a guy who, generally speaking, is very well thought of by his employees and seen at least internally, even if he's not going out and spending the money of a bigger market, as a good owner and a good person to work for. And Andrew Friedman recognized that. And he also recognized what he could do with the Los Angeles Dodgers was take the model that worked in Tampa and supercharge it. And that's why, I mean, it's exactly what he's done. That's why they're the best team in baseball and the best organization and the likeliest to win the World Series. You know, I think David Stearns is like anybody in the game, Buster. You look at Steve Cohen, how much money he has and how badly he seemingly wants to win. And I say that based on knowing the way that fans bring passion to their teams, and that Steve Cohen at heart is a fan. And you know, there is no better opportunity in baseball than running the New York Mets right now. None. There is no better job out there. And for me, it's going to be a matter of whether it's David Stearns, whether it's someone like Eric Neander with Tampa. They need to bring in someone who is established and somebody who has won and somebody who knows how to run an organization. And those are the two names that keep coming up. And ultimately, it will be not up to Steve Cohen getting his pick of the litter. It's up to those guys asking themselves, do I want to go to the New York Mets, a place that has been uncomfortable for executives going on two generations now, and leave this place where I'm established, comfortable, and love my life and love my job?
And it's an interesting decision because different executives, as you know, have made different decisions. Chris Antonetti is generally regarded within the sport as one of the two or three best in the game in terms of running an organization, head of the Cleveland Indians. And you know what? He's passed up opportunities to go to
bigger markets. Because he likes it there. And Chris, you know, I never, like, I'm not going to look at somebody who takes the New York Mets job, especially if he or she leaves behind a smaller organization, and say that person was ambitious. That person. No, I don't think this has to do with ambition necessarily. I think this has to do with your comfort with where your life is right now. And blending that with your desire for something different. And, you know, Chris Antonetti is a person who's really comfortable in his own skin. And he understands that the situation he's got, the gig he's got, fits him right. I think that David Stearns and Eric Neander, just because they're the ones, you know, I looked yesterday through the list of teams through the standings to see, okay, is this person fit? Is this person fit? Is this person fit? And those are the two who keep getting brought up the most by other executives as good fits. And, you know, Steve Cohen, you know, for all of his impulsiveness when it comes to tweeting about his team, Steve Cohen is a much, much, much smarter human being than I will ever be. And he understands how to run businesses to the point where he knows that those are the guys too. He knows that those are the people who he should and will try to talk to. And it ultimately is going to be on them to figure out where the balance in their life is and just how much, how high their aspirations are.
Yeah, Billy Bean accepted a job with the Red Sox, as you know, and then changed his mind and stayed with Athletics.
Yeah, there's so many examples of that. You're right.
Yeah, Andrew Friedman made the decision to go to the bigger one. Theo Epstein recognized the Cubs as an opportunity. You know what? We won the World Series with the Boston Red Sox. The only thing that could be greater would be going to the Cubs, and he did that. So everybody...
It's interesting you bring up Theo, because I've gotten the same sense as you that he's conquered being a president of baseball operations and that the next challenge to him would be being an owner.
Yep.
Like that would be, you know, running Major League Baseball. Like I wonder if Steve Cohen came at him with a blank check or came at him and said, I'll give you $100 million for 5 years, turn this around and win me a ring. You know, how would that be enough to lure him back into the job? I'll give you 1% of the Mets. You know, this organization that's worth, you know, $2 billion. I'll give you 3%. There are so many creative ways to do this. If Theo Epstein is the person that he wants, is he going to be able to lure him with money, which is pretty much what he can offer, since the job itself is something that Theo, frankly, has already done and already proven himself so adept that, you know, he doesn't have any more challenges.
We got a minute left. There's been information dripping out of conversations that the Player Association, Major League Baseball are having, which gives me some hope, more hope than I felt a couple months ago about what the labor situation is. What's your read on that?
I think we need to understand, Buster, that this was a first offer from Major League Baseball, and that whatever is coming out right now or whatever is being talked about right now doesn't need to be looked at granularly. It doesn't need to be looked at from the specifics of what was proposed. It should be looked at more universally, like what does MLB consider a possibility? What does it think that this universe in baseball could look like going forward? And just how open-minded is it to all of these different possibilities that the union wants? And the fact that, you know, the specifics of the offer, no, they're not great in the eyes of the union. But I think the idea that baseball is willing to be creative about what it will think about lends the union a chance to go out and try and make a deal with them and gives baseball the opportunity to honestly get back in the good graces of the players where it has not been for a very long time. So until I have reason, Buster, to be pessimistic, I'm just going to be optimistic about this, because the notion of having no baseball next season honestly makes me want to vomit. And so I'm just going to act like we're going to have baseball. Everything's hunky-dory. People are getting along. Life is good. Rainbows and sunshine. And Sarah Langs is up next. So you're going to have a great day.
Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Buster.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season.
Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
We're driven by the search for better. When it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
0-0-9-6.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter and producer for MLB.com. Sarah, you know, it just so happens now that anytime I see something happen with the Giants, I think of your mom. And the Giants now have fallen to second place for the first time in weeks. How's she holding up?
Well, she, as I have stated on here, is not the world's most optimistic fan. That's just how she approaches sports. The 49ers, the Warriors, all of these teams who, by the way, have had a ton of success, especially over the last 10 to 15 years. So I'm going to put that out there. But yeah, I think she would say she saw this coming. I think she would say she saw this coming at Citi Field in that ninth inning, even though the Giants won that game. But, you know, I'm going to continue to remind her to be optimistic. They're going to make the playoffs. And I think that that pitching staff, if they all get healthy, has the potential to help them make a deep enough run. But it does feel like this is a Dodgers division.
So if you are the Giants, okay, you're Gabe Kapler and you make the wild card game, one game, who on that staff are you starting to think about lining up for the wild card game? Because we know the Yankees, as we sit here today, Gerrit Cole is going to find his way onto the mound in the wild card game if that's what the Yankees wind up with.
Yeah, it's a fascinating question because I think my initial instinct when you first said it was, oh, it has to be Kevin Gausman. I mean, he's been the Cy Young candidate. He's been overall the best pitcher on their staff, but he hasn't necessarily been as good lately. And I'm starting to think about Logan Webb. I mean, there's a lot of merit to how great he has been for them more recently. I think that he's probably been their hottest and best pitcher over the last month or so. So I wonder if Gabe Kapler would consider that, but it feels like it has to be Gausman. I mean, he's really been their ace now in this entire Kapler era and certainly throughout this year.
All right, we do this thing every year where I have you rank the 10 best pitches in baseball, not pitchers, and these are for starting pitchers, the 10 best pitches in baseball based on the quality of the pitches and, of course, the results. There might be on your list, I don't know what your list is, but among the top 10, there might actually be a couple pitches owned by the same pitcher. So we do this every year. I've been looking forward to this. We'll start out with number 10.
So I'm going to start out by saying that before we came on here, I was staring at, there's a great page on Baseball Savant, Pitch Arsenal Stats. I would encourage anybody to pull that up. It has run values. It has whiff rates. It has all of the things that I considered as I was putting this list together. And I was sitting here, you know, we're recording here at around 9:30 in the morning, staring at the list, thinking about all the pitches that I did not have on the list and how frustrated I am that they are not there. So I'm starting with that. And my number 10 is Joe Musgrove's curveball. So, you know, an 078 batting average against 122 slugging percentage. I mean, these are just crazy numbers when you think about a pitch, close to 40% whiff rate for him. And I come back to that no hitter that he threw back in April. Only one strikeout was on his fastball. So most of it was his off speed stuff. And this curveball is a big part of that.
Number nine.
Number nine is another curveball. We've got Charlie Morton in here. I know he gave up two home runs on it when he faced the Yankees a week and a half ago or so, but it's been an outstanding pitch for him. I mean, throughout his career and still this year going strong, even in older age, 123 opponent batting average, 186 slugging percentage, a 42% whiff rate, really, really dominant.
Number eight.
Number eight is Walker Buehler's four-seam fastball. So a 195 batting average against a 351 slugging percentage. And something I'll say with him, and this will kind of come up with some of the other pitchers we get to as we go up the list, is that a guy like him, when I look at the list of most valuable pitches, the four-seamers, the fastballs are usually going to be towards the top because run value as a concept is a counting stat. So if you use it more, you're going to get more outs on it. It still has to be a really good pitch, but that's just to say that a pitcher like Walker Buehler is also going to have great non-fastball pitches, but I end up putting his four-seamer here because it's been one of the 10 most valuable pitches in baseball. So I just wanted to explain that. It's kind of a how much you use it stat, but even still, it needs to be really good or else you're going to use it a ton and it's going to get lit up.
Number seven.
Number seven is Max Scherzer's slider. So his fastball has been one of the seven most valuable pitches in baseball. But when I saw his name there with the fastball, I was like, we have to go Scherzer slider. This has been one of the most dominant pitches, not just this year, but across the board for pretty much his entire career at this point. A 116 batting average against this year, 241 slugging percentage, a 46% whiff rate. Anytime we're getting close to 50% on the whiff rate, it's going to end up on this list because that's almost half the time when they swing, they are missing on those pitches.
Number six.
Number six, Frankie Montas's splitter. So I think this one has probably been flying a little bit under the radar, but I wanted to give it some love. So he has a 52.3% whiff rate on this pitch, a 138 opponent batting average on it, and a 174 opponent slugging percentage. He's really been using it more since about the start of July, and he's just gotten outstanding results on it. So a really, really great pitch and certainly up there on the nasty scale as well.
Number five.
Number five is Freddy Peralta's four-seam fastball. So it's tied for the second most valuable pitch in all of baseball, a 140 opponent batting average, 281 slugging percentage. And, you know, the Brewers have had so many pitchers who have been so successful this year. Of course, we're thinking of their three Cy Young candidates with Peralta, Woodruff, and Corbin Burns. But this is actually the most valuable pitch on the Brewers just across the board. So I had to get him in there.
Number four.
Number four is Kevin Gausman's splitter. So we were just talking about him. He has 117 strikeouts on the pitch, which is the most for any pitcher on a single pitch type this year. And a 114 batting average against, a 116 slugging percentage, 45.9% whiff rate. And I think we talked about this earlier in the year, but that's been the key to his success with the Giants. He had this great splitter and the Giants said, hey, throw it more. And that's been really a key to his success.
Number three.
Number three is Shohei Ohtani's splitter. And I almost put it number one. And the only reason I didn't is because his workload is a little bit lower than some of these other pitchers. But this pitch has been not just the most, one of the most dominant pitches we've seen this year, but one of the most dominant pitches we've seen body of work in the pitch tracking era. So he has an 074 batting average against this year and a 095 slugging percentage. They're both the lowest for any starter on a single pitch type, a 54.4% whiff rate. And, you know, he's had some more success lately, especially since July, if we look at his stats. And he's actually been using this a little bit less and going to it a little bit more just as an out pitch, but it's an outstanding pitch for him.
Number two.
Number two is Carlos Rodon's four-seamer. And this kind of gets back to an outstanding pitcher this year is going to have multiple great pitches. So I almost put a slider. So I'm kind of using that to get two in here, but we'll go with the four-seamer. The four-seamer has been the most valuable pitch in baseball so far this year. So it had to be number one on the list. He's saved the way the run value works on baseball's month. He saved 23 runs by using this, which is just an outstanding number. And just to mention that slider, 107 batting average against, 128 wow. slugging percentage. And those are related. I mean, each of these pitches being really good and playing off each other is really important to how great he's been this year.
And number one.
Number one is Gerrit Cole's four-seamer. And I will admit that it might not have been number one before the outing that he had last night, but he had 32 swings and misses last night, which is the most by any Yankee in a game in the pitch tracking era. And 18 of those were on this four-seamer. So it was on my list. I hadn't ranked it yet at the point when he was pitching last night, and it had to skyrocket to the top. I mean, this pitch has been so good for him. And I think that he has really gotten to the top of that AL Cy Young conversation. This pitch is a huge reason why. It's also tied for the second most valuable pitch in all of baseball, 201 opponent batting average, 339 slugging percentage, whiffs, you know, about 30% of the time, and just so much swing and miss, and such a great pitch for him.
Yeah, that ever-shifting conversation about who the best pitcher on the planet is. I mean, early in the year, there's no doubt it was Jacob DeGrom, who was the best pitcher we've ever seen. We have no idea what he's going to bring, you know, going forward. The best pitcher on the planet at the moment, I you know, that's Gerrit Cole to me, based on what we saw last night in terms of what he's capable of.
Absolutely. And I will say, just to all the Mets fans or anybody else who's listening, I was considering guys who've used those pitches a lot this year. So Jacob DeGrom comes up on some of these lists, depending on, you know, where the minimums are at and anything else. But I did try to keep it to guys who are currently actively pitching and who were expecting to pitch for the most of the year. So I will say that. But I agree. I mean, Gerrit Cole, I mean, it's not just all of the strikeouts, but he had 15 strikeouts and no walks last night. That's tied for the second most strikeouts without any walks in Yankees history. And I just think that that's really impressive to me. Whenever I see 10 strikeouts and no walks, that's a different level of game to me. You know, we see 10 strikeouts pretty frequently at this point, but I just think when you're able to have that control throughout the game, it's just an entirely different ball game.
All right, Sarah, thanks for doing that. Thanks for putting together that list.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Thursday, and a couple things to promote here. Obviously, the College Football Podcast. We are at the end of our first week. We've got Kevin Agandi and Joey Galloway on today's episode, so you got a week's worth of content to go back and listen to if you're excited for college football tonight. And also, don't forget Better Days on ESPN Plus. If there's a game, someone's betting on it, stream season two of Better Days, the Mike Greenberg hosted series that brings the true stories of unforgettable gambling adventures to life. All episodes are now streaming only on ESPN Plus. Now to the tweets. There was a lot of pointing and laughing at the Mets in today's Bleacher Tweets. We got Cody Simpson at Cody the Blind. Cody writes in, "Dude, the Mets really are the most unprofessional and poorly ran franchise I have ever seen. Baltimore is the worst team in the world, and even they managed to keep their S together better than the Mets. Hashtag fire everyone." And Kyle Benning piled on as well. Kyle said, "Mets gonna Met. Isn't it amazing the lack of accountability the Mets front office and PR department have for one of their own? Sandy had a prompt, strict statement about Baez, but soft, delayed statement about Zach Scott. New ownership, same train wreck."
I agree, which is why I wrote last night. And I don't know, you know, Taylor, we haven't gotten your opinion on it. To me, Steve Cohen, whatever he does, he's conscience free. Like he can do whatever he wants at this point because it's been such a wreck.
Yeah, burn it down. I mean, it kind of gives him sort of a blank canvas to create the organization that he would, you know, theoretically like to see. So I guess that's an upshot for Mets fans, perhaps. Let's go to Matt.
I wanted to cut in. Yep. Do you agree with me? I don't know why, but I you know, the fact that Zach Scott refused the breath, that really bothers me. Like there's something about that really bothers me.
I'm definitely not, there's no world in which I will defend Zach Scott, but I know that like in certain states, if you refuse the breathalyzer, you might be able to somehow get out of the DUI, but your license will be suspended. So maybe he woke up and, you know, his legal mind sprang into action. That is the only, you know, logical reason I could see him doing it. But again, not defending it. And I understand why you're bothered.
Yeah, stand in front of players next time after refusing to take the breathalyzer and say, "We got to be accountable here."
Yeah. Burn it down. Let's go to Matt. I'm sorry, I did not include your handle, Matt, but he wants to talk AL Manager of the Year. Of course, La Russa, Melvin, Baker, and Cash will be considered, but will Scott Servais get consideration for the Mariners' surprising season?
Yeah, Matt, and just to be look behind the curtain, I actually had planned to talk with Jeff today. My number one topic was going to be the extensions that the Seattle Mariners gave to Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais, because Scott Servais has been terrific. The Mariners are hanging in there in the wild card race, mm-hmm. and that's really interesting, but the Mets kind of blew up those plans.
Maybe tomorrow. Last one for today, Quest at Quest called Tribe writes, and Buster, did the Indians win the Lindor trade? I love too early overreaction. What do you think, Buster?
Yeah, it's too early. But I mean, they've won it for now. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Taking a side. I like it. All right. That does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Jeff, Sarah, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, a Foxaloner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provides one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus chews.